This week's Sedra is Parshas Lech Lecha, and Abraham gets the tzivui, gets the commandment from God. Lech Lecha me'atzucha me'moladucha me'beis avicha l'aretz asher areka. To leave his land, to leave his birthplace or his family home, and to leave and the house of his father, to go to the land that God will show him, which was Eretz Canaan, later Eretz Yisrael. And the Torah tells us that when Avram went, Vayikach Avram es Sarah Yishto, actually first it says Vayelech ito Lot. Lot, who was the nephew of Avram, the son of Avram's brother who had died. So Lot went with him. And then the Torah says, Vayikach Avram es Sarai Yishto. Avram took Sarai, his wife, Ves Lot ben Achiv, and Lot, the son of his brother, Ves Kol Rechusham, Asher Rechashu, and all the wealth that they amassed, Asher Asu B'charan, that they made in Charan, Vayetzu Laleches Arza Canaan, they went to the land of Canaan. Vayavram Baretz had become Shechem. Avram goes until the place of Shechem at Elone More. So Avram goes into Eretz Yisrael. He traverses parts of the land. Vahaknani Oz Baretz. And the Canaanites were at that time in the land. And this caused a dilemma for many of the Rishonim, and the implications of their problem echoed throughout the generations by some of the secular commentary, the secularists who wrote commentary on the Torah, ignoring the simple explanation of the Rishonim. And the question is, now the Torah was written by Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Torah was written by Moshe Rabbeinu. So how is it that the Torah says, Vahaknani Oz Baretz, the Canaanites were then in the land? The seeming implication being that at the time the Torah was written, the Canaanites were no longer in the land. And if the whole Torah was written by Moshe Rabbeinu, as it certainly was, so how could the Torah say, Vahaknani Oz Baretz, the Canaanites were then in the land? This is the question that is raised by the Mefarshim, raised by Rashi, and I'll get into Rashi's explanation later. I want to suggest an explanation for it, that Torah tells us afterwards, that shortly after Avram enters Eretz Yisrael, comes into Eretz Canaan, and shortly afterwards, Vayira Baretz, there's a famine in the land. And the famine became a heavy famine. And because of this, Avram felt compelled to leave Eretz Yisrael and to go down to Egypt. And then there is a whole episode of the question many ask is, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu initiate that Avram should go to Eretz Yisrael just before there would be a famine? It almost appears that he had to go to Eretz Yisrael in order to leave Eretz Yisrael. But I think that that's not a real question. I think that we could suggest that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to emphasize to Avram, and through Avram to all the generations after him, that it's not only important to have a relationship with Eretz Yisrael when you live in Eretz Yisrael. It's important to have a relationship with Eretz Yisrael even when you don't live in Eretz Yisrael. And this is significant today, because it's very interesting that we find many, and many who identify with observance, don't feel the special attachment to Eretz Yisrael. That Jewish people throughout the generations felt. They're very comfortable where they are. And because of that, they feel that Eretz Yisrael, and it's very interesting, at one time, this perhaps could have been the philosophy identified. This philosophy could have been identified. But even there, I think it would be an exaggeration with the people at the very right of the Orthodox community. Those who were anti-Zionistic at that time. Those who unfortunately identified the Zionists with some of the greatest enemies of the Jewish people. But we see this shita creeping in among some of those who identify themselves as modern Orthodox. Years ago, this would never have happened. But I think what has happened as years after World War II passed by, people don't sense the need anymore for a special land for the Jewish people. And so they think that there is no significance to having a special land. And some of them have even become sympathetic with the murderers and the enemies of the Jewish people. We have sunk to a new low in that respect. Now, but so in order to emphasize that the Jews in Chutz Laaretz also have to have a relationship with Eretz Yisrael, that reminds us of our responsibility of acting on behalf of our brothers in Eretz Yisrael, and to let the leaders of the American government, of the different political parties, to know that we will hold them responsible for their attitudes regarding the security of Eretz Yisrael. And we will hold them responsible if they endanger the security of Eretz Yisrael. It's very interesting. I've seen in the poskim, Shuvos, that said that if somebody can contribute to Yishuv Aretz, to the settling of Eretz Yisrael, by being in Chutz Laaretz more than he would be able to by being in Eretz Yisrael, so he fulfills the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael by being in Chutz Laaretz. And I think that is our responsibility today. But in any case, so Avraham goes down to Egypt, and then the whole episode with Paro takes place. Paro wants to take Sarah as a wife, and he's punished by God, and he returns Sarah to Avram, and he tells Avram to leave, and Avram leaves, but the Paro enriches Avram, gives him many possessions, cattle, sheep, money, and somehow Lot, the nephew of Avram, also becomes enriched. And they return to Eretz Yisrael, and a dispute breaks out between the shepherds of Avram and the shepherds of Lot. According to our sages, the dispute was because the shepherds of Lot, contrary to the halacha, used to let their animals graze in land that didn't belong to them, that belonged to the residents of Eretz Canaan, to the Canaanites and the Perizzites, who dwelled in that part of Eretz Canaan at that time. And the Torah tells us, in conjunction with that, that there was a dispute between the shepherds of Lot and the shepherds of Avram, the Haknani, the Haprizi, Uz Ba'aretz, the Canaanites and the Perizzites were then in the land. Now, and at that time, Avram tells Lot, why should there be a fight between us? We are relatives. Either you go one way and I'll go the other way, but let us separate. It's not that Avram was not concerned about Lot, as demonstrated later on in the Sedra. But I guess I could best explain that Avram wanted to change the relationship, what my father would call fellowship versus friendship. In other words, there are those that we have to be concerned about. We need to be friends with them. But there's a difference between friendship and fellowship. And up to that point, the relationship between Lot and Avram wasn't just one of friendship. It was a fellowship, perhaps even stronger than that. And so much so that the shepherds of Avram claimed that they were right in allowing their cattle to graze in the territories of the Canaanites and the Perizzites, over the objections of the shepherds of Avram, who claimed that that was stealing, that it was robbery, it was not their territory. But the shepherds of Lot claimed that Avram doesn't have children, and it looked like Avram would never have children. So Lot would be his inheritor. And God gave the land to Avram. And by virtue of the fact that God gave the land to Avram, it belonged to Lot, because he was the inheritor of Avram. And consequently, they were allowed to graze in the other parts, in the parts of Eretz Yisrael that they didn't have actual possession of, that belonged to the Canaanites. Okay, the Chazal tell us it wasn't true, because the Canaanites at that time still had, first of all, the Avram took possession of Eretz Yisrael only a little bit later. And furthermore, even then, they had certain rights in the land. So one question that's always asked is, but Avram was still alive. You can't inherit from somebody while he's still living. I think. So what was the claim? What was the claim of the shepherds of Lot? But I think the claim of the shepherds of Lot was that when God gave Eretz Yisrael to Avram, he wasn't giving it to Avram as an individual. He was giving it to Avram, to all the generations, the future generations of Avram. And their claim was that since Avram will not have children, so the descendants of Avram, so Lot becomes the descendant, like the descendants of Avram. And Avram didn't get it from God for himself. He got it for the future generations. And just as today, Eretz Yisrael is possessed by the Jews. It's not just possessed by the Jews of this generation. It's possessed by the Jews of all generations. And we have to bear that in mind when the question of giving back territory comes up. I'm not saying that there aren't circumstances where it might be necessary, but we have to know we're not just acting on our behalf. And when I say we, I'm talking about the Jewish people of this generation. We're acting on behalf of the Jewish people of all generations. And when we may have make a decision, it has to be with that in mind. Now, so Lot, initially Lot was, Lot decided that he wants to join Avram in his journey to Eretz Yisrael, to Eretz Canaan. After all, his father died, and Avram was his uncle. And Avram had a parental perspective in regard to Lot. But the Torah tells us, Vayelech ito Lot. Lot went with him. And Vayikach, and the Torah tells us more, Vayikach Avram esari ishto ves Lot ben Achim. In a sense, Lot went, but he became part of Avram's group. And the head of the group was Avram. But it seems that afterwards, Lot in Egypt became more independent. And this is very understandable. We find that when the Torah tells us that when Yaakov went down to Egypt, the Baal HaTorim says that they carried, the sons of Yaakov carried Yaakov on their shoulders. And the children and the wives were taken down to Egypt in wagons. That's the opinion of the Baal HaTorim. And the question is, what is the significance of Yaakov being carried on the shoulders? But, you know, whenever you have a sports game, I'm not too familiar with the sports games, but every once in a while, I see pictures on the television or in the newspaper that if the victory that a certain team attains is due to one person, at the end of the game, the team will carry that person on their shoulders. Carrying on the shoulders of a person is indicative of the fact that this person is our hero. This is the person that we're looking up to. And when a people move from one country, in a certain country, if a family is in one country and stays in the country, so the head of the family is the elder, the patriarch, or the matriarch of the family. But when they move to another country, usually the head of the family becomes not the one who had the most roots in the previous country, but it's the younger person that becomes the advisor and the leader and the one who gives direction how the family should act. And it could be that in Egypt, while Lot certainly did not become the leader of the whole camp of Avram, the whole base of Avram, but nevertheless, because there was a change, there was a movement in Canaan, Avram took him. He was controlled to a certain degree by Avram. But Mitzrayim, Lot began to see himself in a different light. The situation changed. The seniority that Avram, that the perspective that he had of Avram vis-a-vis himself changed. Avram was no longer his guide. He saw Avram perhaps as an equal. And because of this, he gave his own direction to his shepherds. And possibly the shepherds, having that same attitude, gave their own direction to themselves. They did not listen to the shepherds of Avram. They saw themselves as a separate camp. But it wasn't only because of the trip down to Egypt. That combined with another factor, I think, played a role. And that was, the Torah tells us at that time, v'haknani v'haprizias baritz, the Canaanites and the Priziites were in the land. Who are the Priziites? So Ibn Ezra says that the Priziites were actually, Prizi was a son, or the Priziites were descendants of Canaan. But when the children of Canaan are listed in the end of Parshas Noach, so Prizi isn't mentioned. In a sense, there was a name change. One of the other sons of Canaan changed his name from whatever it was previously to Prizi. Prizi because their cities did not have walls around them. But in any case, there was a name change and they became known as the Priziites. A person could suggest that in a sense, Prizi, who when Avram came, was part of the Canaanite community, decided to become independent also. Because he decided to become independent, some of the Farshim say that in all likelihood they didn't fight with each other, but there was no love between them anymore. There was competition between them. And the truth of the matter is, a person could suggest that there was quarreling between them, but they didn't have Avram's approach. Let there be peace. Let us separate our ways. Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid in the Sefer Chassidim tells us that Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid in Sefer Chassidim tells us, Minhag HaYehudim, the custom of the Jews, Afilu HaTov Shebehem, even the best among them, Kaminhag HaGoyim Asher B'Socham Hem Yoshvim, is affected by the attitudes of the nations in whose midst they dwell. And to a certain degree, we can suggest that the former base of Avram, the shepherds of Avram and the shepherds of Lot, who up to this point worked in unity, worked together, worked as one group, because they came to be two separate groups. They were influenced by the way the Canaanites and the Perizzites acted, and they were quarreled with one another. And this caused the riv, caused the fight between the Roe, Mikne Avram, the shepherds of Avram, and the shepherds of Lot. So it could be that the Torah, when the Torah says, when Avram came to Eretz Canaan, it says, "Bahaknani Osbaritz," the Canaanites were then in the land. At that point, there was a certain unity. There wasn't fighting among them. But after there was a rav, there was famine in the land. And we know what desperate situations causes, each one trying to get whatever he can. The Perizzites separated themselves, although living in the same territory as a separate group from the Canaanites. And there might have even been quarreling between them. And that had an impact on the base of Ram that dwelled in their midst. And consequently, it caused a rift between the Roe Mikne Avram and the Roe Mikne Lot, the shepherds of Avram and the shepherds of Lot. And we could suggest that so that's why the Torah wants to tell us what caused the quarreling. When Avram came, Lot was subservient to a certain degree to Avram. V'haknani Osbaritz. There was only Canaanites in the land. But now it's v'haknani v'haprizi. There was breaking up of the group. And there was quarreling between the groups. And there was that caused, when they saw that, that caused quarreling between the groups of the Jews of the base of Ram. And that caused fighting. It went a step further, and that caused fighting. And that's how we could explain the Uz. And what do we see from it? We see from it is that a person, when you make a decision, you cannot make the decision just on the basis of the way the circumstances are today. You have to consider what are the circumstances going to be afterwards. What they might be. I always mention that the Jewish people said Nasa v'Nishma at the time of Matan Torah. According to our sages, they were on the level of Malachim or even higher than that. The level of angels. And 40 days later, they stand in front of an Egel Hazav, in front of a golden calf, and say, "Elohecha Yisrael, this is your God, O Israel." How did that happen? Changing circumstances. That's a big issue when we do Geiris. We can't just evaluate. And sometimes we're limited, and sometimes we're not successful in our evaluation. The question is, we know the way the person is now. At least we think we know. But then circumstances change, and we don't know how he will react to those changing circumstances. So when we evaluate when we evaluate a person for Geiris, we have to consider changing circumstances. And I always mention, this is the problem with Jewish education today. The problem of Jewish education today is we rely on the fact that you'll be in a particular type of neighborhood, that your children will have the availability of going to a particular type of school, that your children will be of a particular type of intelligence, that you will have an income of a particular value. But things don't always work out the way you think. In fact, I would say most of the time, there is a deviation from what we think. And we say, oh, you have nothing to worry about if they'll be in the proper environment. We have to educate our children that regardless of the environment they have, we have to prepare them to the best that we can for a changing environment. You know, you take a look at all the Sfarim that talked post-World War I about the effects of the environment on the community. They all say things are changing rapidly. That in the old days, things change slowly. The war changes. But things change. Look. Just in the last couple years, how the environment has changed. And it's a falsehood to believe that we're not influenced by the environment. From the most secluded communities, there are rebellions. People are leaving. Because you cannot hide the environment, the outside environment today. But we have to give the children the ability, to the best of our ability, to deal with the outside environment, because we don't know our future, what we will encounter, and we certainly don't know what they will encounter. Whatever is accepted today might not be accepted tomorrow. And what is not accepted today, and there's very little, might be accepted tomorrow. So this was Avram. Avram evaluated that Lot would submit and become part of the environment that he was trying to create and would adapt. And initially it appeared that way. But after going to Egypt and then returning and seeing the quarreling between the Canaanites and the Perizzites, there was a change in the situation. So, and the Torah wants to emphasize how we are influenced by the outside environment. Even when the outside environment doesn't have to do with us, it has to do with the Canaanites and the Perizzites, we are influenced by it as well. That's why it says, V'haknani, originally Haknani Oz Baritz, but then when the dispute took place, it's V'haknani v'haprizi asbaritz. The Canaanites and the Perizzites were then in the land. But Rashi, in explaining the expression, when Avram came to the land, v'haknani asbaritz, he explains it somewhat different. Rashi says that the Torah is not coming to tell us the Canaanites were then in the land, but are not now in the land, because clearly, at the time that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Torah, the Canaanites and the Perizzites, they were all in the land. But the reason it says, V'haknaanites az baritz, the Torah is telling us that the Canaanites were then in the land and not in the land beforehand. They came to the land of Canaan or the land of Israel around the same time, maybe a little bit before Avraham Avinu. Okay, we have to ask, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu want Avram to go just at the time the Canaanites came? Who was in the land previously? According to Rashi, in the land previously were the descendants of Shem. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I will return the land to the descendants of Shem. So we have to understand what is the idea behind it. Now, also, so according, we could say that the Torah wants to emphasize that when Klal Yisrael conquered the land, and when HaKadosh they didn't conquer the land that belonged to the Canaanites. The Canaanites stole the land from the descendants of Shem, and now the descendants of Shem came to retake the land that belonged to them. But if that was the idea that the Torah had in emphasizing the Hakananiyos Baritz, that the Canaanites were then in the land and not beforehand, because beforehand it was the Bnei Shem that were there. So the question is, the first Rashi in Chumash says why did the Torah start off with the story of creation? Why didn't the Torah tell us, start off with HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem? Because the Torah is basically a book of mitzvos, a book of law. So the Torah should have started off with the first mitzvah of the Torah, of HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. Of course, there are many questions. There are mitzvahs mentioned in Chumash Bereishis. That's for another time. And Rashi gives the answer, why? Shem Yomru Umos Olam. That if the nations of the world say to the Jewish people, list them at them, you are robbers, you stole the land from the Canaanites, so you should tell them, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, he gave the land, and I would say, when it gave them land, it means he allowed certain people to capture it. And he took it away from them and gave it to us because he was the creator and the owner of the land. It seems that a better argument would be, hey, we came back to take what's ours. We are the descendants of Shem. And the Canaanites, they stole the land from the descendants of Shem. And we, as the descendants of Shem, came back to take the land. I think, now, in the past, I've discussed that first Rashi. And I said, I've mentioned that what is, you think, imagine at the UN, the leader of Iran, in the old days I would say Saudi Arabia, but because of the Abraham Accords, I have to change the way I phrase it now. Let's say in the UN, the representative of Iran will get up, as they have done many times in the past, and say, Israel, the Jewish people, they stole the land from the Arabs. And if a Jew will stand, the ambassador of Israel, will stand up and take a Chumash Bereishis in his hand and read Bereishis Bara Elokim Es Hashamayim Ves Haaretz and give this answer. Do you think that the leader of Iran will say, oh, I'm sorry, you're right, the land is yours? Obviously not. So what is the answer of Rashi? Shem yom umos ha'olam listem atem. So you should say that. But the answer is, that's the nature of the Jew. And I've mentioned this many times. The nature of the Jew is we are affected, perhaps, because of the fact that we are constantly running from country to country. Perhaps because we try to be nice to everybody. Because we're sensitive to everybody's needs. Oversensitive. But the nature, the perspective we have is that ultimately, unfortunately, what the nations of the world say makes an impression on us. And Heve Yomer Lehem, we tell them, not that because we expect that they'll accept what we say, not because we think that they're going to listen to us, but we tell them that we should listen to us. We have to answer them in order that we should get the message. And not that they should get the message. First of all, even if you gave the other argument, they were rejected also. There's a different standard that the world has for the Jews and a different standard that it has for the other nations. Don't we see every time when they send rockets from Gaza, and they place their rockets where civilians are in schools. And Israel has to defend itself and knock out the areas where the rockets. So there is an outcry from the nations of the world about how Israel is attacking civilian areas. But I don't recall that when rockets were sent from Gaza into civilian areas where there were no military targets, that the world should complain. There is a different standard. And if we say, you stole it for us, we came to get it back, it wouldn't make any difference. So the whole message is not a message to them. It's a message to us. So why do we use that message? I think it's important. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want Klal Yisrael to think that the reason they're getting Eretz Yisrael is because they're the descendants of Shem. Perhaps that adds justification to our case. But the reason we're getting Eretz Yisrael is because we are the descendants of Avraham Avinu. As I said, Avraham got the land not just for himself, but he got the land for all the generations of the Jewish people. Shem is not part of the Jewish people. And I think perhaps that's the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had Avram go at the time that the Bnei Ches captured the land from the sons of Shem, that the Canaanites captured. Canaan was the son of Bnei Cham. The Canaanite was the son of Cham, and because Canaan was the son of Cham, so So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted them because HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not want the Jewish people to see themselves as getting the land of Shem. He wanted them to see getting the land. Shem was a very important person. We talk about the yeshiva of Shem Vever. I'll discuss it in a minute. But Eretz Yisrael is the land of Avram to us. It's not the land of Shem. It's not the land of Shem. So, and because of that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avram, go, he did not have Avram go to the land when the land belonged to Shem, to the Bnei Shem. He had him dafka go to the land when it belonged to Ham, to the Canaanites. So we should recognize that it's the land of Avram, not the land of Shem. Now, and we have to understand, because it's a Yerusha. Eretz Yisrael is part of the Yerusha. Our Yerusha, our inheritance, comes from Avram. Now, it's true that there was a Shiva of Shem Ve'ever. And even Yaakov learned in the yeshiva of Shem Ve'ever. It's interesting. My father told me that years ago, one of the great Rosh Yeshivas from Europe, who was very much involved in the one of the leaders of the Muslim movement, came to America, and he gave a speech in America, and he said, it was before Matan Torah. What could they have learned in the yeshiva of Shem Ve'ever? The halacha didn't apply yet. So he suggested that the yeshiva of Shem Ve'ever was a base hamusar. It was a study, a house dedicated to the study of musar. My father told me that my grandfather got very upset when he heard that. In other words, the yeshiva of Shem Ve'ever, they might have learned musar also. They might have learned Pirkei Avos, whatever, or something that has a similar approach as Pirkei Avos. But it was a study of Torah. We see that the Avos observed the halacha. How they knew the halacha, Baruch HaKodesh, or through other means, whatever it was. So there was a study. Chazal tell us that Maseches Avodah Zarah, at that time, of course, that's a form of a guzma, but the halachas of Avodah Zarah were more numerous that they studied than the halachas of Avodah Zarah that we study. Well, it certainly was more Avodah Zarah at that time, more idolatry at that time. But it wasn't just about the Shiva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. They could have studied also about the Shiva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. But in addition to the Shiva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach at that time, they studied all the halachas of Torah. And there's a difference between Eretz Yisrael and Torah. Torah tziva lanu Moshe marashi kilashachot. They studied Torah. But Torah at that point was not halachically a Yerusha. Torah became a Yerusha from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. Eretz Yisrael became a Yerusha from the time of Avraham Avinu. And that's the idea here. The idea here is Eretz Yisrael belongs to us not because of the UN, not because of Shem, but it belongs to us because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it to Avram for his descendants. And his descendants are descendants ki v'yitzchak yilcha zara. It's only the descendants of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov and those who join them and become descendants of Avram, Av Hamon Gayin Nisaticha, that they inherit Eretz Yisrael, that Eretz Yisrael becomes their possession. The Torah became the inheritance of the Jewish people from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay.
If anyone has a question, please put it in the chat. Someone commented, it's you mentioned about the, was it the Kinesi, that the Russians and Ukrainians are breaking apart. But we're not getting their lands. I don't know that it's, but someone commented that.
Okay. Okay, that's, yeah.
If Yaakov studied all of the halachos and the Avos kept all the halachos, how could Yaakov marry two sisters?
It might be more appropriate for different concept. I have given many shiurim on that. there are numerous answers. I'll say very quickly the Ramban's answer.
Yeah, they don't want the Ramban's answers, answer.
But the most popular answer is the Ramban's answer. The Ramban's answer is that the Avos observed the Torah only in Eretz Yisrael, not in Chutz Laaretz. And Yaakov married the two sisters in Chutz Laaretz. The opinion of the Das Kenim and Bala Tosfos is that they underwent Geiris, they underwent conversion. And because they went to conversion, so they were considered not related to each other. My own answer was that it was only the Avos that observed the Torah that observed the Torah, and Yaakov wasn't considered to be an Av of Klal Yisrael till much later. Shortly before or just after he entered Eretz Yisrael, returned to Eretz Yisrael. He was appointed to be a Nav of Klal Yisrael, but he did not fully exercise that position as a Nav of Klal Yisrael till later. There are other answers also. The Brisker Rav has many answers to that question. It would require a whole share and maybe more than that to discuss it. I have given shiurim on the side about it.
One person just asked, this was from a half hour ago, why again did Lot go with Avram to Canaan?
Well, I assume that Lot lost his father and Avram was his uncle. And Avram had a parental attitude towards Lot, acting in place of his brother who died, according to many, in the he might have died in the Kivshon Aish, and whatever it is, and because of that, Lot felt a certain responsibility.
Okay, thank you. So it wasn't the why, but why did it say Vayelech Ito Lot, that particular Lashon?
Vayelech Ito, in other words, Lot didn't want Avram to take him. He wanted a certain degree of independence, but Avram insisted. Apparently Lot, by going along, went along with him. But some point out that here it says Ito, not Imo. And Ito means he was subservient to him, whereas Imo, which is mentioned later, it means that they went more like equals, not with subservience.
Okay. So that's, why wasn't Avram able to have a greater influence on Lot?
I would assume that was because of the outside influence. Because of the outside influence. And maybe in Lot's formative years, Lot's perspective was somewhat influenced, but Avram was able to hold it back. But then, as I said, as a result of Egypt And as a result of the influence of the Canaanim and the Perizzites, the impact, I should say, the influence of Egypt and the impact of the Canaanites and Perizzites, so Lot's attitude changed. It was changing circumstances. Like I said, it was changing circumstances. Changing circumstances has that impact. And Avram saw things. Perhaps we could suggest, you know, with this whole parsha is the halach of Geirus. Geirus for Avram, if we say Avram was a ger, or even if we say he wasn't a ger, of his becoming a Jew, there is a whole process. And perhaps part of learning about Geirus is to learn this parsha to see what is involved. Who can become a ger and who can't become a ger? We have to evaluate not just on the basis of the here and now, but we have to evaluate about what's going to be in the future as well. Of course, we're limited in our ability to do so, but to the degree that we can, we have to do so. That's what I would suggest.
Thank you, Rebbe. Thank you, everyone, for being here. Mir Tzashem, next week, same time, same link.